Perkut of Eliezer, Perek Lamed Beis. We're holding in the middle of the Perek. Just to recap where we're holding in the point in, I guess, in history, we're talking about Yitzchak Avinu. So what happened was there was a Kedas Yitzchak, and we said last week that right after Kedas Yitzchak was the death of Sarah Imenu, and it says that Yitzchak was an Avel for his mother Sarah for 3 years after the Kedah. And then it says that after 3 years he married Rivka, and then he forgot about his mother, and then we said avoid at the end that, you know, a person is supposed to leave the shaychus to his parents and then cling to his wife, and that's like his new family now. Now that was the Indian that we spoke about last week. So basically the cheshbon over here, we said there was 3 years. Right? So the cheshbon over here, the parsha cheshbon, is that Yitzhak Avinu was 37. By the time of the Akedah, that's what Chazal tell us. We saw that in the previous parak, it said he was 37. And it says in the pasuk, an explicit pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Toldos, "Vayihi Yitzchak ben Aboyim Shona bekachto yes Rivka." The Yitzchak was 40 years old when he married Rivka. So if you have from 37 until when he was 40, it was 3 years. So for that, Chazal are telling us over here that he was in avelus for his mother for 3 years. That's more or less where it's coming from. The Shaila is, an interesting Chazal, that Chazal tell us that if you look in the Pesukim, right, we're talking about Akedas Yitzchak is towards the end of Parshas Vayera, that's what happened at the end of Vayera. And Mamish at the end of Vayera, after Akedas Yitzchak, we find out that it was told to Avraham Avinu that, you know, that his brothers in Haran had children, and Chazal tell us that at the time of Akedas Yitzchak, that's when Rivka was born. That's what Chazal tells us. And then the next parsha is Chayisara. In Chayisara, in the beginning is when Sarah dies, which we spoke about last week. And then Avraham Avinu buys Maris Machpelah, which the Midrash over here doesn't really get into. And then afterwards, he goes through a whole story of Eliezer getting a shidduch for Yitzchak, which we spoke about Barichus in Perek Tazayin. Right? And then the end of the Parshas Chayisara says that, you know, Yitzchak marries Rivka. And the end of Parshas Chayisara is B'nai Keturah and B'nai Yishmol, which we also spoke about in previous Prakim. But then the beginning of Parshas Toldos, that's sort of where we're holding down, the beginning of Parshas Toldos. That's what we're up to. But Chazal told us that Rivka was born at the time of Akedas Yitzchak. So now, if we know that Yitzchak was 37 at the time of the Akedah, according to Chazal, and we know that he got married when he was 40, and Rivka was born at the time of the Akedah, it should come out, l'chorah, that Rivka was 3 years old when she married Yitzchak. L'chorah, that's what it comes out. According to Chazal, Rivka was 3 years old. There's a famous thesis in Yuvamis, Daf Samach Aleph from Beis. Thesis brings that there is such an opinion that Rivka was 3 years old when she got married, but he also brings from Reb Shmuel Chosid, the father of Reb Yudah Chosid, that Reb Shmuel Chosid held that Rivka was actually 14 years old when she got married. He proves it from other Chazals, Sifrei and Parshas Vizes Abroch, I think it is, that basically there's other rayas that Rivka was really 14 years old, not 3 years old. So we have Machlekes. Machlekes Chazal, Machlekes Rishonim, if Rivka was 3 or 4 years old when she married Yitzchak. I saw this interesting idea in the sefer from Rav Shimon Schwab called Mayan Beis HaShoeva. So in the beginning of Parshas Toldos, so in Mayan Beis HaShoeva, Rav Shimon Schwab brings down that you can reconcile this machlekes, whether Rivka was 3 years old or 14 years old at the time of the Akedah, at the time that she married Yitzchak. How do you reconcile it? He says like this, that really she was 14 years old, like Rav Shmuel Chosid wants to say. Really her body was 14 years old. But upon the death of Sarah, which happened at Akedah Yitzchak, the neshama of Sarah left her and went into Rivka. And then, from then, Rivka, you can start counting again from when she got this neshama of Sarah. And from then to when she got married, it's 3 years. So really, she was 14 years old. But when we say that she was 3 years old, it means that she only had the neshama of Sarah for 3 years. That's what Mayan Beis HaShoeva, the name of named Rabbi Michael Forschlager, Michael Forschlager, who was a rabbi in Baltimore in about 100 years ago. They recently put out his farm, Teres Michael, Michal Forsinger, and then I found out afterwards that Rav Chaim Falaji in Enid Kol Chai, more or less, and I think it was in Sanhedrin, more or less says the same vart, that when we mean 3 years old, it doesn't literally mean 3 years old, it means 3 years from when the neshama of Sarah left her and went into her body. Because that's when Sarah died, when, you know, 3 years before Rivka got married. That's what Rav Chaim Falaji says. He brings a raya that we find such a musaf that a person could become a Gilgul after they're already born, from a Zohar that says that when Pinchas killed Zimri, so it says that all of Bnei Shimon came and started beating him up, and it says that his neshama left him, and the neshamas of Nadav and Avihu came inside his body, and they were the ones that got beaten up by the Bnei Shimon. That's what it says in the Zohar. So you see that.
What did they do wrong to get beaten?
Nadav and Avihu, that they didn't get married, whatever the time exactly on Nadav and Avihu was.
I didn't know they actually beat him. I thought they tried to, and the Gemara says that Hashem saved
them, no? I think that's what the Gemara says, but if I'm not mistaken, the Zohar says that they started, that they actually, could be a similar thing as Gemara and the Zohar. I'll go put him, that's what the Zohar says, that they started beating up, and the Shama went out, and the Shama and Nadav and Avihu came in.
So they killed him?
I don't know.
So then you'd be Tomei Bish. How can you continue?
It's a good shot. Maybe we'll talk about it at a different time. But if you die and come back to life, are you going to be Tamei Meis? It's a whole nidin. Al Kopanim, you see from that Zayar.
It's also a mum, because if they beat him up, then they had a few
mumim. Okay, maybe it's a mum oiver. You have to know how badly they beat him up. But the point is that you see that a person could become a Gilgul of someone else, even like after they're already born. Pinchas was real. He wasn't just born then, and he became a Gilgul of another video. So you could say that Rivka was already, you know, let's say she was, if she got married, she was 40, so she was 11 years old, right? She was 11 years old when Sarah died, and then she became a Gilgul of Sarah, and then, you know, 3 years later when she was 14, that's when she married Yitzchak, and then she was 3 years from when she became the Gilgul, but 14 years from when she was born. That's the word that they say over here.
I think there could also be two people in the same neshama. Such a thing exists.
Yeah, that's another raya you see from that Zohar.
You see from another place, it says, I think that Zimri was the Gilgul of Esav, and it says that he's a Gilgul of Shem, even though they lived in the same time.
I heard. Gilgul of Esav. I'll go find him, fine. So that's that part over here. Yeah. Okay, let's go back there. So we're up to Rabbi Yehuda Eimer. Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Esrim Shana Aysa Rivka Akara. For 20 years, Rivka was an Akara. She wasn't, Akara means she wasn't able to have children. What's the cheshbon of 20 years? So it's a very simple cheshbon. You look in the Pesukim. It says in the Pasuk, Vayitzak ben Avraham Shana Bekakta Yis Rivka. Yitzhak was 40 years old when he gave birth, when he married Rivka, sorry. And then it says, a few psukim later, Yitzchak ben Shishim Shana Baledes Esav. Yitzchak was 60 years old when Yaakov and Esav were born. So if you count from 40 to 60 is 20 years. So that's the cheshbon of, it's a pashan cheshbon of the Medrash that Rivka was an akara for 20 years. Right, from when Yitzchak was 40 years old to when Yitzchak was 60 years old, it's 20 years. So Rivka was an akara for 20 years. Yeah, that's a very pashat cheshbon from the psukim. Before we go weiter and get into the story of the birth of Yaakov and Esav and whatever, there's a very interesting question over here. There's a Targum Yonason in Bereishis, Perikov Hey, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, on this pasuk, on the pasuk where it says that Rivka was in a kara. So Targum Yonason says, yes, Rivka was an Akara for 22 years. That's what Targum Yonason says. So, we generally always say, like, Targum Yonason follows Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, remember? So, he's mentioning the same point that Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer is mentioning, but he's saying it differently. We said a very simple question that is 20 years, Targum Yonason says 22 years. So, where is the extra 2 years that Targum Yonason is coming from? Well, where did he get the extra 2 years from? So that's the kasha on the Targum Yonason. So there's a lot of different truths that were said to try to answer this kasha. One tarts is like this. Rav Yishai Berlin, writes, he has a sefer, a very chashuv sefer on Targum called Mine Targima. And he writes simply that it was a mistake. It's a mistake in the Targum Yonason. Instead of saying Chav Beis, it's supposed to say, instead of saying 22 years, it's supposed to say 20 years. Pashat, mistake. There's another teretz is brought down in the sefer Ahavas Yehinason from a Binyamin Schmirler. It was a Rav. He lived in Stanislav in I believe it's in Hungary. So he has a sefer on Targum Yonason called Ahavas Yonason. Now Ahavas Yonason, he says, what I might consider a little bit of a wild vart, but he wants to say that really, Yitzhak, we had a machlekes before. How old was Rivka when Yitzhak married her? Was she 3 or was she 14? So he wants to tie out that really, really what happened was that Yitzhak married Rivka the year she was born. That year, she was 1 year old when he married her. And he refrained from consummating the marriage with her until she was at least 3 years old, royal Abiyah. So when we said that Yitzhak was 40 when he married her, that means that he consummated the marriage when he was 40. But really, there's another 2 years that he was technically married to her that it's considered part of the cheshvan of how many years she was in Akara. And that's why it says that she was in Akara for 22 years. Why did he wait to consummate the marriage? So one idea is because the Gemara says, that's a Mishnah in Nida that says that a woman is not called a bas bia until she's 3 years old. Another idea, he says, is that we said previously that Yitzchak was in a velus for his mother for 3 years. So now the lashon we use is a velus. He was an oval al evel al sara imay. So he says, well, this is a shtick of chiddush, but he says that in the halacha is that an avel, at least during the shiva, an avel is aser b'tashmi shemita. That's one of the things that an avel is aser. So he wants to say that for those 3 years after his mother's death, you know, even though he was, let's say, technically married to Rivka, but he waited 3 years to do bia with her. So that's why those 3 years are not counted, and the Torah looks at it as if he married her when he was 40, even though he really married her before that. But they go into the cheshbon of how many years she was in a car. It's a huge chiddush from Ahavas Yohanasan. I don't know. It's hard for me to think that like he married her the year she was born. It's like to say that she was 3 years old is already like a big chiddush. To say even more that she was really one is even bigger. But that's what he wants to tell. Ahavas Yohanasan. I think. It's interesting. I'll tell you a story that when I first saw this Targum Yonason, before I knew any of the Terutzim, so I had a friend who was getting married. This was when I was a bachar in the mirror. So I had a friend who was getting married that week or the next week or whatever. And Leil Shabbos, he wanted to go visit his Rebbe, a certain Rebbe in Sanhedrin. He makes a tish Friday night, whatever. So he tried to get me to come visit his Rebbe. I'm like, wow, why should I go? It's a waste of time. What am I going to do there? So he tells me, I guess he was trying to convince me to go. He says to me, is this my Rebbe? He's such a big Talmud Chacham. You can ask him a kasha anywhere in Kol HaTorah Kula, and he has a parrot, and he can explain to anything you want to know, whatever. So I'm like, you know what? I thought to myself, you know what? I'll ask him about this Targum Yonason. We'll see what he says. So I went with him to his Rebbe or whatever, and you know, we're sitting there by the tish. It was like a small, it's like a small chassidus. It was mostly like the Rebbe and like his family and like a few other people. It was in his dining room. It wasn't like in his base Spanish. I'm sitting like 2 seats away from the Rebbe. It's like very quiet over there. It was like between songs or something. So like, you know, I like turned to the Rebbe and like asked him this question. I was like, says and Targum Yonason that Rivka was in a car for 22 years. But if you look at the Pesukim, it's before that it's only 20 years. So like, I said this to the Rebbe. And, like, he looked at me. Nothing. He didn't say anything. No answer. So like, okay, it doesn't have an answer. So what's that? There's no. I feel like that. Okay. Remember, it's. I don't know. It's an interesting question. It's hard to answer such a question.
Okay, you spoke about Shimon, right?
What?
You spoke about Shimon, right?
Shimon?
Yeah, at the beginning of this year. Yeah.
What?
You spoke about Shimon, that the Amtri Shimon they killed the Pinchot.
Yeah.
Now it's spoken by Yishmo, it's the same Shoyash, Shimon Ayin, which is Lashon Shmir.
I hear.
And both of them and Shmir are connected with Gilead Royce, because it says that, you know, 10 common members, Nus, Yod, Oilum,
Yishmo.
And here by Shittim, Shimon was Dark of Shittim. So Lachoyah, the name of Shmir is connected with.
I hear.
Because it says in Lashon Gemara's Redin that after the Nishim and he drank wine and he became crazy, it said Shmali, that is something like Lashon of Shmir, in order to do
To listen to me, Hashmi, like something. Al-Kaparas, I found someone pointed out to me another Targum Yonason. something also you have to think. This is from the Shalos Tshuvas, Tshuva Me'ava, from Rebbe Elazar Fleckels, the Talmud of the Neder Yehuda, in Chelek Bein Simin Tov, in Tshuvas, Shalos Tshuvas, Tshuva Me'ava. He says like this. It says in Rishonim, in the Ashkenazi Rishonim, the Panei Achraza and the Pirush HaTorah L'Torah, a lot of the Balei Tesis, they bring down this idea that it says that after Kedesh Yitzchak, so Yitzchak went to Gan Eden for 2 years in order to his rapis, in order to get healed. Like we mentioned in the previous parak, we said according to the Pirush HaKeach that Yitzchak was slightly cut by the Kedesh Yitzchak, so he went. Oh, Rabbi Epstein, this is for you. So it says in these places that after the Kedesh Yitzchak, Yitzchak went up to Shemayim for 2 years to Gan Eden to get healed after that Kedah. So he says that those 2 years are included in the cheshbon of the 22 years. It says that Rivka was in Akara for 22 years. Right? And the kasha is what the pasuk says that he got married when he was 40, and she gave birth when he was 60. So what's the 22? There's only 20 years. So he says there was another 2 years that Yitzchak was in Gan Eden, and those 2 years are not counted in the psukim, but they're counted lamaisa. So that's why Targum Anderson says 22 years, even though the pasuk seems to be saying there was only 20 years. That's more or less the teretz of the Shalos Tshuvas, Tshuva Me'ava. There's a few questions about this.
It comes out that the cheshbon afterwards of the Avraham Avinu by the bar mitzvah of Yaakov Avinu and Esav, that he was in a certain.
Was he 13 or 15?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the same type of shayla, but it's also a 2 year discrepancy over there. Al Kapanim, but the problem is that Targum Anderson himself also says that after Kedis Yitzchak, so Yitzchak went to learn by Shema Eva for 3 years. So the shaila is, if you want to say that Targum Anderson also learns like this medrash that says that he went to Gan Eden for 2 years to get healed, so which one happened first? The 3 years that he went to learn by Shem Ve'Aver, or the 2 years that he went to Gan Eden? Which one happened first? So, l'chora, you would say, you know, first you get healed and then you go learn, right? But then it would mean that the Torah is cheshbening the 3 years afterwards, and it's not cheshbening the 2 years before. I don't know. This idea is it's a very interesting medrash that says that Yitzchak went. There's a Moshe of Zakenim about it in the end of Parshas Chayisara when Eliezer brings Rivka to Yitzchak. So the pasuk says that Rivka, they were approaching Yitzchak, and he was outside in the field davening or whatever. So they're approaching Yitzchak, and Rivka says to Eliezer, Who is this man that's coming to greet us? Like, who is this guy? It sounds like there's something weird with him. And Eliezer says back, oh, who? That's my master. That's Yitzchak. That's the guy that you're marrying. And then it says that she fell off the camel. She covered herself and she fell off the camel or whatever. But what was bothering her? She saw this guy coming towards her and she's like, who is this guy? Like, sometimes if you saw a guy in the street, she would ask, who is he? Obviously, there was something different about Yitzchak. What was different about him? So the Mishnah of Zakenim says that what was different about Yitzchak was that he was standing on his head. Right? Usually people stand on their feet. But Yitzchak, he was standing on his head. He was upside down. Yeah, that's what the Mishnah of Zakenim says. And the Mishnah says, why was Yitzchak upside down? It says, because Yitzchak was in Gan Eden for 2 years to get healed, and now he was just coming back. So like when you come back from Gan Eden, he says that you come upside down. So that's what Rivka saw, and that's what she was bothered by. And then Eliezer said, oh, that's my master. That's the guy that you're marrying. The guy, that weirdo that's standing upside down. But no, the idea of being upside down, I could sort of hear it. The Gemara says that someone, I forgot who it was, maybe Rabbi Felder will tell us who it was. Someone went to Gan Eden and he came back and they asked him, like, what did you see over there? And he said, Olam Hepuchra, you see. I saw an upside down world in Gan Eden. The people who are chashav down here, they're not chashav up in Gan Eden, and the people who aren't chashav over here are very chashav in Gan Eden. So you see that there's an Indian that, like, in Gan Eden things are upside down.
I don't remember who it is.
Isn't it a Gemara?
No, it's a Gemara
somewhere.
No, I don't remember the name.
Where is it? It's in Gittin, maybe?
I'm seeing it as well.
not long ago.
Yeah.
The similar, the Pirush Rekech HaTer, the end of the story of Akedah Yitzchak, it says, and you know, they came back, Vayeshev Avram Be'er Sheva, and Avram lived in Be'er Sheva. And that's at the end of the story of Akedah Yitzchak. So the Rekech asked, what about Yitzchak? He says, Avram lived in Be'er Sheva, so where does Yitzchak live? Didn't say anything about Yitzchak. So the Kach says, from Elamai, from here you see that Yitzchak went to Gan Eden for 2 years, and that, you know, that's a remez to that idea, because it only says Avram lived in Beersheba. It didn't say that Yitzchak lived in Beersheba.
He went to Gan Eden with his goof or without his goof?
Yitzchak?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it could be that he didn't die, he just went with his goof. He entered into Gan Eden from the entrance to Gan Eden.
Yeah, it could be.
Which some people say is in Tehran, right?
Difficult to say that.
But they went against him alive? Or yeah, other Marishas was against him alive, so maybe he did the same thing.
But his body wasn't the actual body that we know nowadays.
I mean, he wasn't as dark as...
Is this like a thin, you know, plastic-like, you know...
It sounds like nails.
We learned that he was transparent, he looked like a nail, whatever.
Yeah, other
Rishu couldn't have entered Gan Eden alive even if he was very mezuchuk.
Why? Rabbi Shubin Levi was able to. I don't know.
His inside, whatever.
Shiras Basosha, I think, went to Gan Eden alive, and we all know them,
huh? Yeah, and Chiram, and a few people.
Chiram? Well, I think Chiram, some people said he died a very painful death.
They didn't say they took
that body. Yeah, there's two Chirams.
It's a disgusting medish, you know.
Yeah, I know, I know.
A good medish, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Shloisha also adds something like Kav and Divulokiyisha.
The Gemara also, but the Gemara doesn't explain what happened. The Medrash says what happened.
Yeah.
It went up to.
Yeah, we're on page Reish Ayin, or Ayin Reish.
So that I survived the 22 kings of Israel and 22 kings of Judah.
Yeah. Ayin
Reish. Okay, let's go back there.
I was reading a sefer today. It says the reference to the page Shin Dalet Mem. But Shin Dalet Mem because they don't want to say Shema.
Right. Okay, let's go right there. So we said that Rivka was in a car for 20 years, despite the fact that the entire innocence is 22 years. La'achar esrim shana, after 20 years, l'kacha Yitzchak took her, v'halach imach lehar hamayriah, and he brought her, he went with her to the Mount Moriah, l'makayim shenekat sham, to the place where Yitzchak was bound, to the place of Akedah Yitzchak. V'ispalal al ha-heroyen, v'yayosar leit. And he prayed that she should become pregnant, and Hashem listened to the prayer. Shinemar, it says in the pasuk, "Vayatar Yitzchak laHashem." Yitzchak prayed to Hashem. The end of the pasuk says, "Lenoichach ishtai," across from his wife. Vayayoser le Hashem, and Hashem listened to him. Vatar Rivka ishtai, and his wife became pregnant. So the Medrash over here is saying that Yitzchak alone prayed for Rivka to become pregnant. Because it says the hispal he davened. It says the pasuk says vayetar Yitzchak. Yitzchak prayed. This the Radal points this out. Rashi and Chumash learns not like this, because Rashi and Chumash says that Yitzchak and Rivka both prayed, and when it says lenoichach ishtai, that means that he was praying opposite her. She was in one corner of the room, and he was in the other corner of the room. The Medrash over here, the way the Radal understands it, understood that lenoichach ishtai, across from his wife, doesn't mean that he was praying and she was praying across from him. No, it just means he was praying and she was like there in front of him, like he was praying about her, and he was praying like if you have something in front of you and you say like I'm davening that like this should work out for me. So that's he brought her to Haram Maria so that he could pray. But it doesn't say that they were both praying. It says that he prayed. Rashi understood that they were both praying, but. Ba'al laledes. It came time. Okay, so she became pregnant. Now ba'al laledes.
This is a very usual thing, a normal thing to think that she was also davening. Even though maybe the important portion of the davening was coming from Yitzchak.
Yeah. That's a gemara.
The normal thing that a woman could also like to stay there and pray. It wasn't just like, you know.
You're right. No, fine. You're right. I'm not necessarily.
So obviously she would be davening.
Well, the Gemara Rashi is also coming from the Gemara. The Gemara says that they were both praying, and the pasuk is speaking about specifically the prayer of Yitzchak, that Hashem listened to the prayer of Yitzchak because he was a tzaddik ben tzaddik, and Rivka was a tzaddikas bas rasha. So the Gemara understood and Rashi understood that they were both praying. Just like the point is that like Yitzchak's prayer was the ikar. Pinchas and Eliezer could be that also understood they were both praying, but they were focusing on the prayer of Yitzchak. Mm-hmm. That when the pasuk says L'noichach Yishai, it doesn't mean to tell you that she was also praying and he was praying in the opposite corner, but rather L'noichach Yishai means he was praying and she was over there, and like she was the object, sort of the object that his prayer was talking about. Yeah. Okay. So she became pregnant, and then. Now, Ba'alaledes, it came time for her to give birth. The Radal said that, and he's bringing it from Sefer Yosha, that we're not actually talking about the time that that's coming for her, the time to give birth, but rather we're talking about towards the end of her pregnancy. So he says that, the Sefer Yosha says that this is happening at the 7 months into her pregnancy. 7 months into her pregnancy, Umechavoleha higia nafshalamus. 7 months, let's say, into her pregnancy, so she started having contractions. And the contractions were so bad that he gave up nafshalamos. It was so bad and so painful that she was like, she felt like she was gonna die. Right? Nowadays we have that phenomenon of contractions that are happening, you know, the last month, the last 2 months of pregnancy. That I know that not necessarily so strong, but it's called Braxton Hicks. That there's such a thing in the last 2 months, but it doesn't mean that the birth is mamish imminent. Right, so she was in a lot of pain. So her shaila was that since she felt like she was gonna die from the contractions that she was having, so Rivka thought, the way the Radal explains it, Rivka thought maybe she should have an abortion. That's what the Radal says. That maybe she should, the lashon of the Radal, maybe she should cut up the child into pieces while it's inside. So she went to go ask the Telech Lidreishes Hashem. She went to go ask the Navi, who Rashi tells us is the Navi is talking about shame. She went to ask the Navi, you know, what should I do? What's going to be? What's the future? What am I supposed to do over here? So first it says, V'halcha v'hispalel b'makim tar. First she went to go pray in the pure place. She'emar v'telech Lidreishes Hashem. She went to seek out Hashem, the pure place. So the Radal says that we had in Perkut Aleph and Yud Beis, we had this expression, the Mokrim Tohar, and over there it's talking about Eretz Yisrael. But he says over here, it can't be it's talking about Eretz Yisrael, because we know that Yitzchak and Rivka lived in Eretz Yisrael. It's not a chiddush to say she went to Eretz Yisrael. So he says, you would have to say, but in context, that over here it means that she went also again to Haram Maria, to the place of the Beis HaMikdash, and she went and prayed over there more, and then it was revealed to her, I guess through the Navi, through shame, and Aver, what's going to be, that she's going to have two children, or whatever, and it's not worth it for her to have an abortion. She should go through it. The Radal explains that now that she understood why she's having so much pain, so she was able to accept it and deal with it. But before she knew what was happening, it was like too much for her to bear. The children were inside her womb, or inside her innards, like powerful warriors, powerful people. Shenamar, it says in the pasuk, Vayisraetzitzel habanim bekirba. The children were running inside her. They were like mamish run. They were like keep running. Like, I guess they were like kicking like very strongly and very powerfully. You know, Rashi says that whenever she would walk past the Beis Medrash, so Yaakov would kick because he wants to go learn. And whenever she would go past the church or through a place of idolatry, Esau would kick because he would want to go out and take part of the idolatry. It's
how many Beis Medrash were there back then?
I don't know, but it could be every day she was walking past the Beis Medrash for Shem Ever. I don't know.
Where was the Beis Medrash?
Where was it? I don't know. Maybe in Yerushalayim.
You don't know where it was?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I want to go learn there myself. I don't know. Right. Me also Yaakov Avinu. So what? Okay. So that these are the two kids inside. Me also Yaakov Avinu. What did Yaakov Avinu do when he was inside? So it says, Ochaz ba'akev Esav lahapiloi. He was grabbing on to the heel of Esav lahapiloi. I'm not sure what that means in this context. The word lahapil has two meanings. Either it means to make him fall down. So either it means that Yaakov was holding on to Esav's heel in order to, like if he would walk, he would fall down because someone holding his heel. Or lahapiloi can mean to make him have a miscarriage about Esav. I'm not because a miscarriage is also called a hapala. So I'm not sure exactly how to translate it in this context. Maybe the Medrash means in both ways. I don't know. Shneamar, it says in the pasuk, V'yadoi echezes ba'akev Esav. It says about Yaakov Avinu that his hand was holding on to the heel of Esav. Mikana to lomed, from here you learn, she'en b'nei Esav noiflim at she'yove sored mi'yakov v'katitz raglov shel Esav. From here we learn that the descendants of Esav are not going to fall until the remnant of Yaakov comes and cuts off their feet and like destroys their last hope. Shinemar says the pasuk, Chazei havesa ad dihis gizereis even. In the Nevuah of Daniel, I guess it's talking about Esav or Edom. It says that I saw that you're going to be in existence until the rock cuts you. Because of Acher Oimer, and another passage says, Li no kom v'shilim, Hashem is speaking and saying that I have the revenge, and I'm going to fulfill my what I'm going to get back at them. The Ace Tamut Raglam, at the time that their foot is going to like slip away. So from now we understand that the Bnei Esav are not going to fall until the remnant of Yaakov cuts away their foot.
Bnei
Esav,
yeah.
Yeah. Bnei, I said something else. Yeah. I don't know exactly what that means, that the remnant of Yaakov is going to cut off the feet of Esav and that's what's going to destroy them, but or that's what it means. I don't know what that means for nowadays. We'd have to get Rabbi Robert to come back this week. The guy who came on Hanukkah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking, I had a foolish idea there.
Yeah.
It must say it doesn't mean anything, but on the map of Europe, Italy is like a book coming out.
Yeah.
And Israel is like over here. So I was thinking that Israel goes into Italy and it grabs it by the boot, like the boot of Europe is Italy.
That's
so
true.
When we conquer Italy, then we have then we cut off the foot of Europe.
Interesting. I was thinking in a similar way. The custom is that when you meet the Pope, you're supposed to kiss his feet. So like maybe there's like something that the remnant of Yaakov is gonna like, instead of kissing the foot of the Pope of Edom, you're gonna cut off his foot, and that's gonna be like the downfall of Edom, something like that. I don't know. You're saying the same idea in a slightly different way, but yeah. Omer of Acha, let's go back there. Omer of Acha. Rav Acha said, "Gadlu hanorim, the children grew up. Zehalach b'derech hachayim, v'zehalach b'derech hamoves. This one went in the path of life." And this one went in the path of death. Shinemar says, "Pasuk vayigdulu hanorim." The children grew up, and they grew up, and they took separate paths. Yaakov Avinu halach b'derech hachaim. Yaakov Avinu went in the path of life. Shehaya yeshiv oyhalim, because Yaakov Avinu dwelled in the tents. Vo'esek b'tera kol yamav, and he toiled in Torah all the days of his life. So there's two ways to understand this over here. Either it means that he lived in a tent. What's the significance of he lived in a tent? So you could say that he lived in a tent means that he learned Torah. Because usually Torah is called a tent. We find that in different places. Adam kilmus v'ayhal, that means an oil of Torah, oil of Torah. So Yoshev ayhalim, when it says that Yaakov lived in tents, that means that he learned Torah. The problem is that it's difficult to say that that's shot over here, because it says he lived in a tent and he was Isaac b'Torah. There's a vav. It says and. So it sounds like we're talking about two different things. So the Radal suggests maybe the Vav is a mistake, and it's supposed to say he sat in a tent, meaning Isaac Bater, and take out the letter Vav. That's one idea that the Radal says. Other Mefarshim he brings down from say that no, there were both of these things are true. One was that he lived in a tent, and the significance of living in a tent was that he was a shepherd, and as a shepherd you would have to follow your flock and wherever there was pasture for them to graze on, so that's where you would live. So you were temporarily, you know, you were a nomad, because you would take your tent and put your tent down over here and let your cattle graze, and then when they finished all the food, so then you pick up your tent and you gotta go travel elsewhere. So there was, you know, constantly on the run. So that was what Yaakov Avinu was doing, plus he was also learning in Torah. There's reasons specifically why there's an advantage and a mila for a person to be a shepherd. Rabbeinu Bachai talks about this in Parsha Shmois when he says that Moshe Rabbeinu was a shepherd. So he says that being a shepherd helps bring a person closer to Nevuah, because it helps you, it gives you a lot of time to think, and you're alone, so you're not a lot of the averas that people do is because they're inside society, so they have different types of temptations, whether it's, you know, arayas or it's stealing or these type of things, they only come about when you're in a society of people. But if you're all by yourself, you don't have those type of affairs. So it helps a person work on himself better. And also gives you time to think and clarify different ideas. So he says that there's an advantage just to being a shepherd. So he was a shepherd and he was Isaac with her. The Esav of Rasha, Hayahaylech Bederach Amavis. And Esav, the wicked, he went on the path of death. Lahareg es Yaakov Avinu. To kill Yaakov Avinu. His objective in life was he decided, I'm going to kill my brother Yaakov. Shnema tells in the Pasuk that Esav said about himself, Yikru Yemei Evel Avi. The days of the mourning of my father are going to come soon. Vahargah es Yaakov Achi. And I'm going to kill my brother Yaakov. So you saw that was Esav's objective of life. What he was looking forward to was the chance that he's going to kill Yaakov.
But not until he was like 60 years old.
So that he only said that after the story of the brachos.
Right.
You're right. But I guess you see that's the direction that's what he thought of. That's his focus in life. Might say the Yaakov Shemini, when it brings down in Bereishis, the Parshas told us Remez Kuf Yud, when it brings down this Medrash, it says it a little bit differently. It says Esav went in the path of death, Shaharag as Nimrod as Chur Bino. The Esav went in the path of death because he killed Nimrod and he killed Nimrod's son Chur. So there's a few chedushim in here, but one chedush is that Nimrod's son was named Chur. There's other sources that say other names. I think one source says his name was Baal. Another source, I think Sefer Yashar says that Nimrod's son was named Chanoch. But here, Yaakov brings B'Shem Pirkei Avot Eliezer, the Nimrod's son was named Chur. Other chiddush is that to say that Esav killed Nimrod is a little bit difficult also, because there's other midrashim that say that Avram Avinu killed Nimrod.
Why
did he kill them? Because the Gemara in Erevin says that Nimrod is Amraphel, Melech Shinar, and Avram Avinu killed Amraphel. Because Amraphel was from the four kings. So Avram Avinu killed the four kings, so if he was one of the four kings, then he killed Nimrod. So they speak about this.
Until the time of the brothers, did Esav even care or think about Yaakov? He went his own way. I mean, because he didn't care about the
right. So
birthright, because he didn't care about that.
Right. You could put both of them together and say that in general, Esav was the type of guy that his goals in life had to do with killing. So until the story of killing of Yaakov stealing the quote unquote stealing the firstborn right from Esav, so his goal in life was to kill Nimrod's son. And then that day that he killed them. So then afterwards his goal in life became to kill Yaakov because Yaakov stole the brachos from him. But you see that his focus in life is who is he going to kill next?
Yeah, exactly. I think the question I would tell him is like what kind of
person he was. What was the path he was going?
What kind of inclination he has? So
yeah.
Normal reaction is like, oh, what?
What? He did that? I'm going to kill you! Right.
Like, what? Just ask you a question. Like, I don't know. You know, what kind of...
Right.
That's maybe the normal reaction that would have.
So Issa was the founder of the Italian mafia.
maybe sound like that. He was like, a, you know, going up like a...
He was a mobster.
Escalated, what?
He was a mobster. So he killed people in a very elegant way. It doesn't sound like he was all.
I don't know.
Sounds like he did things very ugly.
So I think like
he. Yeah, that's what Gemara said. Chazal tells us that Esav is like a pig. Why is Esav like a pig? Because a pig has one sign that it's kosher and one sign that it's not kosher. It has split feet, but it doesn't chew its cud. So the manager says that, you know, a pig sticks out its feet like this, says, "Look, I'm kosher," but on the inside, it's not really kosher.
Well, he fooled his father for a while.
Right, so that's the end of Esav. Like, on the outside, like, Esav, you know, he wears a shrimal and a bekesh, he looks like a chosh of a person, but on the inside, he's, like, rotten to the core. Esav looks like he's kosher from the outside. So, like, that's the way Esav does things. It's like, yeah, we'll kill you, but, like, we'll kill you, like, in a way that, like, it's legal, or we'll kill you in a way that it's, like, it's a humane killing, like, something like that, and we'll make it sound nice. We won't call it killing, we'll call it something else, so then it's not called murder anymore. There's different ways that it's of works.
Even though you know,
it's just very tricky.
To do mitzvahs from salt.
Yeah. Right. Weiter. Rabbi Shimon Omer. Rabbi Shimon says, "B'shosh shenekad Yitzchak, when Yitzchak was by the kiddush Yitzchak, nasa es enav lemala. He lifted his eyes upwards, v'ra es hashchina, and he saw the holy presence of God. Uchsiv, and the pasuk says, "Kolirani adam vochay." Pasuk in Parshas Kisisa says that no one can see Hashem and live. But Yitzchak during Akedah Yitzchak looked up his eyes and he saw the Shechina, right? So really he should be dead because you can't see the Shechina, right? Ella says the Midrash rather tachas amisa instead of death. His eyes became weak when he was older and he became blind or semi-blind. Shneva, it says in the pasuk Vayihi Kizoken Yitzchak, it was when Yitzchak was old, Vatihena Einov Merois, and his eyes became weak from seeing, he wasn't able to see. Chazal, it's Gemara Nedorim, Daf Samach Dalet, Chazal tell us that a blind person is tantamount to a dead person. Gemara says different people who are, you know, if you're like this, then it's as if you're dead. It's like a blind person, a blind person, or a person with saras, all the things that are mentioned in the Gemara.
A poor person.
A poor person, right? All these people, that it's as if they were dead. So, fine. So instead of actually dying, so Yitzchak lost his eyesight. So I'll say an interesting thing over here. In this Medrash, the Medrash over here is assuming that the reason why Yitzchak became blind when he was older was because he saw the Shechina by Akedas Yitzchak. There's another Medrash that says that the reason why Yitzchak became blind when he was older was that was Hashem's way of making it happen that Yaakov Avinu would get the bracha. The Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah brings two opinions. Why is Yitzchak blind? Is it because he saw the Shechina, or is it because Hashem wanted Yaakov Avinu to get the brachas? It's two pshatim in the Medrash. There's a gishmak of art over here about this from the Rebbe Reb Heschel in Chanukah Seter Parshas Vayishlach. It's also in Mishnas Rabbi Eliezer, sort of. It says like this. I mentioned this a few weeks ago. What's this idea that if a person sees the Shechina, he's going to die? Why is that true? So I mentioned that there's a suffix about it. Is it because it's a punishment? Because if you're not supposed to look at the Shechina, and if you do it, you get punished, you get killed. It's a punishment. Or he said, is that the nature of how it works? I gave a mashal of if you have a calf, and the calf is walking on the street, and it sees its mommy cow, right? What's the calf going to do? The calf is going to go run to the mommy. Oh, mommy, I want to go next to my mommy. Right? So to a person that his neshama is a chilek alikom imal, is a part of Hashem, a person's neshama is a part of Hashem, so if a person looks at Hashem, so his neshama is just going to jump out, is going to see like, oh, you know, the neshama is like the calf, and Hashem is like the mommy, the calf is going to just like jump out and want to go to the mommy and then leave the body, and then we made that the person is going to die. The explanation is of why it is that if a person sees the Shechina, he dies. The Zerah Berech, with Barachia Shapira, he was one of the first Ashkenazi Mekubalim, he has a sefer, Zera Berech, so he's Mesupik about this. He asks this question, he brings down these two tzadim. He was a Talmud of the Megala Mukais. So that's from that generation, 1500s or so. 1500s. The Zera Berech, he brings this question. So the Rebbe Reb Heschel assumes that the reason behind this idea that if a person sees a Shechina, he dies, he assumes that it's the first one, that it's a punishment. That a person is not supposed to look at the Shechina, and if you do, you get punished that you die. That's what he says. And then he says, builds on top of that another chiddush. He says that, what's the problem with seeing the Shechina? He says that a person is not, there's let's say a hierarchy in creation, that, you know, there's man, and then there's angels, and different types of angels that are closer and closer to Hashem, and man is a little bit farther away from Hashem. So he says that angels, they're allowed to look at Hashem because they're on a higher spiritual level. They could look at the Shechina, but a person is not on that such a high level, so he can't look at the Shechina. That's what he says. He says that's true by a regular person, but if you have a tzaddik is allowed to look at the Shechina because a tzaddik is on a higher level than a malach. It's actually a Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about this. The Gemara says that a tzaddik is on a higher level than a malach because a malach doesn't have a choice of what he does. Even though he does the loftiest things, he says the praise of malachim spend their entire existence singing the praises of Hashem and doing Hashem's will, exactly what Hashem wants. But a tzaddik who does what Hashem wants and sings the praises of Hashem, even though he has a Yetzer Hara, is on a higher level than a malach. So the Rebbe Heschel says that a tzaddik is allowed to look at Hashem, and he doesn't get punished.
And Yitzhak theoretically would be allowed to look at Hashem.
So now the question is like this: Why did Yitzhak become blind? Right. So the Medrash said, as I said before, that the Medrash said two reasons. One reason is like we said over here, because he looked at the Shekhinah. The other reason is because Hashem wanted Yaakov Avinu to get the brachas. Yeah. So now, if I can prove to you that Yitzhak, if I can prove to you this idea that a tzaddik is on a greater level than a regular person or than a malach, if I can prove to you that a tzaddik is on a greater level than a malach, then that will tell you that the reason why Yitzhak is blind is not because he looked at the Shekhinah, because the tzaddik is greater than a malach and he's allowed to look at the Shekhinah, right? So it would have to be that the reason why Yitzhak became blind was that Yaakov Avinu get the brachas. If I could prove to you that a tzaddik is on a greater level than a malach, correct?
Okay.
Yeah. So the Rebbe of Heschel says the Geshmak of Vort like this. It says in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefonov El Eitzel V'Achiv Artzos Yer Stay Under. It says that Yaakov Avinu sent messengers, malachim, to Esav to greet Esav, right? To the land of Seir, when Esav was coming to greet him with 400 men, Yaakov Avinu sent messengers to greet him. It says Rashi, malachim mamish. In this context, when it says malachim, which can mean messengers, it can mean angels. In this context, Rashi says it literally means angels. Yaakov Avinu sent angels. Now, tell me this. If I can send somebody to do something for me, yeah, who's in the higher position? The guy who sends or the guy who's being sent on the mission? The guy who sent, right? So from the fact that Yaakov Avinu sent angels to visit Esav tells you that Yaakov Avinu, who's a tzaddik, is on a higher level than an angel. So that's why Yaakov Avinu sent angels to Esav, because he was trying to hint to him that, no, I'm trying to tell you that a tzaddik is on a greater level than an angel. And if a tzaddik is on a greater level than an angel, then the fact that, why did our father Yitzhak become blind? Not because he looked at the Shekhinah, because he's allowed to look at the Shekhinah, because he's a tzaddik. It has to be that the reason why he became blind is so that I could get the bracha. That's why Yaakov Avinu sent an angels to show Esav that really he deserves the bracha. That's the word from the Rebbe.
When Yaakov Avinu stored the angels, how come he had to spend all night fighting that one angel then?
That's a different topic.
Listen, hey, well, bye-bye.
Those are different angels, but yeah.
Different angels, though.
Different angels, it's a different point, what the angel was trying to do exactly. I don't know, I hear, he was greater than the angel doesn't necessarily mean that you can get rid of him right away.
Exactly. Also the angel, obeys to whatever Hashem tells him, so he doesn't tell the... Yeah,
that was the angel's whole mission, right?
Yeah, if you could spoil his mission, then Hashem sent him, specifically to do that thing.
Al Kopanim, that's our introduction to the story of Yaakov and Esav with the brachas. Now let's see what the Medrash says about the story. Higia Leil Yom HaPesach. It came about the night of Pesach. Leil Pesach, the night of Pesach. The Radal brings from the Raya Mehemna, which is the Zayar in Parshas Emor, that says that this story happened on the night of Rosh Hashanah. But our Medrash says that it happened on Pesach. This lashon of Leil Yom HaPesach, so it's a funny lashon, the night of the day of Pesach. We had it earlier in Parak Chof Aleph, and I was discussing whether it means the Pesach night or the night of Erev Pesach. I wasn't sure. Al Kapanim came the night of Pesach. V'kara Yitzhak le'Esav b'nai Agadol. Yitzhak calls his oldest son Esav, V'omarle, he says to him, Bini, my son, Zehalaila, on this night, Kolo Elam Kuloi Oimrim by Halal. The entire world, the entire creation is singing Halal. What does it mean the entire creation is singing Halal? So the Marzu says that this is an allusion to the fact that when the Jews are going to go out of Mitzrayim, on Leil Pesach, they're going to be singing Halal as they're eating their Korban Pesach and sitting around, they're going to sing Halal that night. So this night, Leil Pesach, the whole world is singing Halal. Another Gersa is Ha'Elyonim Oimrim Bayshira. Instead of everyone singing Halal, it says the Elyonim, the upper realms, the Malachim in the upper realms, is singing Shira. V'Oitzreis Tzlolim Niftochim Bazeh HaLaila. And the storage houses of Tal, of Dew, are open on this night. That on this night is the night that you can get a bracha of Dew on Leil Pesach. So therefore, aseli matamim, make for me good delicacies, good foods, while I'm still alive, I'll give you a bracha, and you'll get this special bracha on this special night where the storage houses of tal, of dew, which bring bracha, are open. So if you bring me these matamim tonight, I can give you a special bracha while I'm still alive, and you'll be able to, you know, be very successful in your life and everything. The storage houses of dew. What's this idea? It's a very interesting thing that they point out over here. The Bayis HaGadol and the Marzu point this out. Our minhag is that on the first day of Pesach, what do we do special on the first day of Pesach? By Musaf? We say Morin Atal. And we do Tfilas Tal. So he says they want to say that this is the source for it. The source for it is over here because we said that on the first night of Pesach, that's when the storage houses of Tal, of Dew, are open, that there's a bigger chance for Bracha. So that makes sense. And that day, that's when we start davening for Tal, and we make a whole tefillah to say the Brachas for Moed Atal. That's what Mepharshim say. I was thinking, I'm not sure, it could be I learned this up a little bit wrong, or it could be I'm missing some information, but as far as I know, it's more of a technical idea. Gemara Tainis on the Gimel says that really you should always pray for Tal. You should always be davening for Tal because Tal do is something that the world always needs for to continue to exist. But there's another halacha that there's a certain time of the year when you're supposed to be praying for rain, and when you pray for rain, that includes dew because like dew is just sort of like rain plus more in a way, at least in what it does. So when you pray for rain, you don't need to pray for dew. Now the halacha is you stop praying for rain on the first day of Pesach. So fine. So then the reason why you start saying Moed Atal on the first day of Pesach isn't necessarily, or at least from the Gemara, it's not necessarily because there's a special bracha of dew on the first day of Pesach. It just happens to be that that's the day that you stop asking for rain. So then when you stop asking for rain, you have to ask for dew because you're supposed to always ask for dew. It's more of a the Gemara sounds like it's more of a technicality. Here it sounds like it's more of there's more of a segula. Okay. Fine. So Yitzchak tells Esav, you'll get this stuff from me and you'll get this special bracha tonight. Ruach HaKodesh Meshiva Vemeres, it was a special Ruach HaKodesh that came and said or announced, Al Tilcham Eslechem Ra Oyin, don't eat your meal with a bread that has bad eye. And don't be fooled or don't be led astray with the good tasting things. Meaning, I guess the Ruach HaKodesh is being merames to this idea that, you know, Esav is not really as good as you think he is, and don't let yourself get fooled by that. Halach lohavi, Esav went out to go bring the food for his father, and he ended up getting stuck over there. And the Radal says from the Medrash HaGadol Bereishis that says that it was min haShamayim, divinely intervention caused Esav to be stuck because, you know, Esav was a good hunter. He knew how to catch his game very quickly, and he was able, you know, he could do things very fast. But for whatever reason, Hashem arranged, I mean, we don't know what the reason is, but however Hashem did it, Hashem arranged for it to happen that Esav got stuck and he wasn't able to come as quickly as possible or as quickly as usual. Amro Rivka liYaakov. Rivka said to Yaakov, Bini, my son, halayla hazeh ayitzveh tlalim neftachim bayim. On this night, the storage houses of dew are open. Hal yoyinim ayimrim shira. The upper realms are singing shira. Halayla hazeh asidim banachal higoyal miyad shibud. On this night, your descendants are destined to be redeemed from their servitude. Meaning the Jews are going to come out of Mitzrayim by Pesach. Halayla hazeh asidim lera shira. On this night, they are destined to sing Shira. Now, the Bais HaGadol asks, what do you mean they're destined to sing Shira? They sing Shira on the seventh day of Pesach, not the first day of Pesach. That's his kasha. I don't think it's a kasha b'chlal, because, of course, like we said before, of course they said Shira on the night of Pesach itself. Actually, it's before Shepasuk in Sefer Yeshayah. In Sefer Yeshayah it says, Hashir Yeh Lochem Kilel Eskadesh Chag. That when Mashiach is going to come, so the song that we're going to sing when Mashiach comes is going to be like the same song that we sang on the night of Pesach when we went out of Mitzrayim. So you see, it's before Shepasuk that we sang a song when we went out of Mitzrayim. So I don't know what the Bais HaGadol is bothered by, but that's his kasha. So Rivka says to her son Yaakov, she says to him, atamim le'avicha, make delicacies for your father, and so that while he's still alive, he'll give you the bracha. But Yaakov, so Rivka tells Yaakov basically, you know, go do what Yaakov, what Yitzchak told Esav to do, get these good foods for him, and he'll give you the bracha. Says the Medrash, Yaakov was an expert in Torah. Pochad liboy al kilalas aviv, and he was scared of the curse of his father. I'm not sure why the Medrash says that he was a baki b'Torah. What is that? What's the qualification here? He was an expert in the Torah, and therefore he was scared of the curse of his father. Because he was an expert in Torah, so he was scared. And if he wasn't a baki, he wouldn't be scared of the curse of his father. I'm not sure what happened. It could be. Maybe I saw this one in the Mefarshim, or maybe I thought of this on my own. I don't remember. But it could be, there's a Gemara that says that kilas talmid chacham afilu al tnai bo. The Gemara says that when a Torah sage, even if he gives a curse with a stipulation, says, if such and such, then this curse shall be such and such. Yeah? If he gives a curse with a stipulation, the curse will be fulfilled even if the stipulation is not fulfilled.
I will not ordain him. If you don't do this, erase it from your book.
Right, erase it from the book. And then he ended up doing it anyways, and he was also erased from the book.
Yeah.
Or we said that Yaakov Avinu said that whoever stole the truffim is going to get killed, and it was Rachel, and she got killed anyways.
But she did steal.
Okay, that's a little bit different. But we see that...
Moshe got erased from one part from the Torah, you're saying, yeah?
But yeah. Oh, we saw what's good. Rivka said that, I think this is what the Gemara brings a proof from this pasuk. Rivka said at the end of this story, when she sends off Yaakov, she justifies it to Yitzchak, and she says Lama Eshkal Gam Shechem Yoy Melchad. Why should I have to lose Yaakov and Esav on the same day? I don't want them to die on the same day, so let's sort of separate them so that they won't fight each other. And then it ended up happening that Yaakov and Esav were both buried on the same day. So she sort of cursed herself in a way. Okay, whatever. But the point is that there's an idea that a curse from a Talmud Chacham is a very serious thing. It'll happen even if the stipulation of the curse wasn't fulfilled. And the Gemara says, "Atihi kilas hedet kalabeinacha." Don't let the curse of a commoner be a light thing in your eyes. It's a serious thing, even a curse of a commoner. So for sure, a curse of a Talmud Chacham is a really serious thing. And Yaakov Avinu, who was an expert in Torah, would for sure know, would be able to appreciate it and realize that. So he was very scared of his father's curse, so he didn't want to do it. Amar lo imay, his mother said to him, "Bini, my son, brachos alecha ve'azracha." I'll tell you this. She says this. Look, brachos, if he gives you a blessing, so the blessing will go on you and on your descendants. Vimklalas, if your father gives you a curse, then alai ve'al nafshi, the curse will go on me and on my soul. Shneimar alai klalas chabini. Rivka accepted upon herself that if Yitzchak gives him a klala, she'll take the klala instead of him. And therefore, you should go to Yitzchak and you'll get a bracha. If he gives you a klala, the klala will go to me. If he gives you a bracha, the bracha goes to you. Halach v'hivi shnei gedayi izim. So Yaakov Avinu went and he brought two kids, two young goats. Says the Medrash. V'chi shnei gedayi izim hoya macholo shel Yitzchak. That was Yitzchak's meal, two goats? Yitzchak would eat two goats in a meal? What, you think he's a big fresser that he would eat two goats a whole? That's his meal, he's going to eat two goats? That's a lot of food for one person. Isn't it enough for him to eat one goat? Shinema says the pasuk tzaddik eichel aseiva nafshei. The tzaddik eats to satisfy his soul, and he eats to satisfy it, and that's it. He's not going to sit around indulging in all in the geshmak of meat. So why does Yaakov Avinu have to bring Yitzchak two goats? Says the Medrash. Elo, rather echad keneged a pesach. One goat corresponds or alludes to the korban pesach. The echad lasas lematamim lachol, and one goat was to make for him delicacies that he should eat those delicacies. Disaninan, because we learned in the Mishnah in Psachim says haPesach ena yivo ela ala seiva. Actually, it says I think it says ena nechal ela ala seiva. The Pesach is only eaten when a person is satisfied. So Yaakov Avinu brought two goats. One goat to give him the meat, and Yitzchak will have a nice meal, and then he'll be full. And then the second goat, that one is like an allusion or a remez to the Korban Pesach, and then he'll eat from the meat from that goat while he's full, and that'll be like a special kiyum of the idea of Korban Pesach. So that's why he had two goats. One was the real meal, and one was for the Korban Pesach. The Ratzal brings that Rashi and Chumash, when Rashi talks about the two goats, so Rashi says that one of the goats was brought as a Korban Pesach. So the Ratzal says that it's not true. The Medrash isn't saying that he took one, he brought it as a Korban Pesach. First of all, I would say that if we're talking about the night of Pesach, so then you already missed the time to bring the Korban Pesach, because you're supposed to do it the afternoon before, and it's already nighttime. So obviously he's not bringing it as a Korban Pesach. It would have to be that he's bringing this meat as like an allusion or as a remez to the idea of the Korban Pesach. But he didn't actually bring it as a Korban Pesach. That's one point. The other point he makes is that the Targum Yonason says a different idea. The Targum Yonason says, why did Yaakov bring two goats? One is the Korban Pesach and one is the Korban Chagiga. Because there's a halacha that you're supposed to bring a Shalmei Chagiga when you go to the Beis HaMikdash by Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. You're supposed to bring a special Korban Chagiga to enjoy the Yantav for Simchas Yantav, and you're supposed to eat the meats of that on by the Yantav Siddur. That's called the Korban Chagiga. So one goat was for the Chagiga, and one goat was connected as an allusion to the Chagiga, and one goat was an allusion to the Korban Pesach. That's what Targum Yonason says. And just like we have on Lil Pesach, so the halacha is that you're supposed to eat the meat cooked, eat the meat of a korban cooked. So therefore, on Leil Pesach nowadays, what we do is we have two cooked things on the Seder plate. We have the shank bone, right, and we have the egg. So one is an allusion to the korban Pesach, which was roasted. Right? I'm sorry, not cooked. I meant roasted. One's roasted, and the other one, right, the shank bone, is roasted. So that's an allusion to the korban Pesach, which you have to eat roasted. And the egg is an allusion to the meat of the korban Chagiga, which you eat cooked. The egg is cooked, right? So we also have these same ramazim that Yaakov Avinu had. The remez to the korban Pesach and the remez to the korban Chagiga. So nichnas. Yaakov Avinu came in, v'omar loy, and he said to his father, "Kum na shiva v'achle mitzedi. Come now and sit and eat from my game. Eat from what I brought you." I go, okay, whatever. But the Bais HaGadol just brings down the reason. Why is it that there's a halacha that you're only allowed to eat a korban Pesach when you're full? You know the reason? So the reason is because there's a halacha by korban Pesach, v'etzem le'sishpiruvo. You're not allowed to break the bones of the korban Pesach. So Chazal felt that if you're eating it while you're hungry, so maybe you're going to like break the bones so that you'll get more food and you can like suck out the marrow. So they said, no, you're not allowed to eat it while you're hungry. You're supposed to eat it while you're full. I think it's a halacha d'rabbanan. It could be it's a halacha d'rabbanan, but I'm pretty sure it's d'rabbanan. I'll go on and fine, whatever. Yes, so Yaakov Avinu comes in and he tells his father, so please sit down and eat from my food. Right? Now he said, please sit down and eat from my food. Omar Yitzchak says to him, right, obviously Yaakov says, please, which is a lashon of kavod, bakasha, I'm asking you, like, please do it. He's not saying it like in a gruff way. You know, Esau was just like, sit down and eat, right? Something like that. And Yaakov is like, please, like in a more calm, in a refined fashion. Omar Yitzchak. So Yitzchak said, Hakol kol Yaakov. The voice is the voice of Jacob. Famous word, right? Hakol kol Yaakov, ayadayim ed Esav. The voice is the voice of Jacob, and the hands are the hands of Esav. So what's Hakol kol Yaakov? Actually, there's a Radal over here. He has like a whole shtickle Torah over here, Alpi Kabbalah, which I don't understand it. But he's coming to answer why the word Hakol, the first word Hakol, is spelled without a vav, and the second one is spelled with a vav. That's Es Samach Mem Zayin in the Radal. It's a whole thing Alpi Kabbalah. I don't understand what he's talking about. But Hakol kol Yaakov, why does it say Hakol twice? The voice is the voice of Yaakov. Hakol kol Yaakov, B'yichud Hashem. The voice, B'yichud Hashem. Let's call it the unification of Hashem's name, which the Bais HaGadol says is an allusion to, let's say, praying, or Kriya Shema in specific. That's praying. Hakol kol Yaakov, B'yichud in Torah. And it says, the second time it says the voice of Yaakov, that's the voice of Yaakov, is talking about the logic or the thinking of, or the discussion of Torah. So one is talking about the power of prayer that Yaakov Avinu has, and the other one is talking about the power of learning Torah that Yaakov Avinu has. That's what the Baal Zibbah says. The V'loy Oid Ella from the Rabbi Leomi Izmir, he says a slightly different idea. Like, what prompted Yitzchak to say this about Yaakov Avinu, that Hakol Kol Yaakov? So he understands that the Medrash is saying two things prompted Yitzchak to say this about Yaakov Avinu. One was Yichud Hashem, the fact that Yitzchak, that Yaakov Avinu mentioned Hashem, because Yitzchak asks Yaakov, he says, how was it that you were able to bring me the food so quickly? So Yitzchak says, so Yaakov says, Ki Yikra Hashem Aleikach Lefonai. That Hashem made it happen, Hashem your God made it happen in front of me, that it worked out, that I was able to bring you the food so quickly. So Yaakov even mentioned the name of Hashem. And the Medrash says that usually Esav never mentioned the name of Hashem. Right? Yitzchak never talked about God. Only Yaakov Avinu talks about God. So the fact that this person, whoever it was, this anonymous person was talking about God, so Yitzchak concluded, oh, his voice sounds like Yaakov Avinu because he's talking about God. Esav doesn't usually talk about God. The Mepharshim speak about, like, so how come Yitzchak didn't realize that, like, Esav wasn't, like, so religious as he thought he was? It's because Esav is involved with, like, hunting and animals, whatever, so he was dirty a lot of the time, so he didn't want to mention Hashem's name because he's dirty, but really he believed in Hashem. That's what Yitzchak was thinking. But here he sees his Hashem's name being mentioned, so he thinks, oh, this must be it sounds like Yaakov, it doesn't sound like Esav. And the other thing was Hegiyah in the Torah. He heard the voice of the learning of Torah. Where did he hear the logic of the Torah in what Yaakov Avinu said? So Rabbi Leo Mizmer says 2 points. One is the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Ayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara says that you're supposed to eat while you're sitting. You're not supposed to eat while you're standing. And over here, when Yaakov Avinu tells Yitzchak to eat, he says, come sit down and eat. So he said, sit down and eat. He didn't say, stand and eat. So in that, Yitzchak saw the logic of the Torah. So that's why he said, I'll call Yaakov. The other point is that he said that Yaakov Avinu said, sit down and eat. Yitzchak understood that when he said sit down, that's a remez to the fact that in later generations there's going to be the Korban Pesach and the Leil Pesach Seder. And the Pesach Seder, the halacha is you're supposed to sit and recline while you're eating certain foods of Haseba. So in those words of sit down and eat, Yitzchak saw that whoever was speaking had the logic of Torah, so he assumed that it had the voice of Yaakov. And the hands are the hands of Esav. The hands of Esav in terms of murder, shfichus tamim, spilling blood, and all types of other horrible deaths, that's what the hands of Esav caused. And not only that, says the Medrash, that the divide between Yaakov and Esav is so apparent. Kishamachrizim Hashemayim Hakol Kol Yaakov Hashemayim Royashim. When they announce in the heavens, I don't understand what this is talking about, so I'm just going to read it and translate it. But it says, when they announce in the heavens that the voice is the voice of Jacob, Hashemayim Royashim, the heavens either make noise or they quake. And when they announce in the earth that the voice is the voice of Jacob, anyone who listens and does properly, his portion is with that voice of the voice of Yaakov. Anyone who doesn't listen and doesn't act properly, his portion is with the hands or the hands of Esav. I'm not sure what that means, but that's what the Medrash says. Let's finish it off. Rabbi Yehuda says, Eser brochois berach Yitzchak leYaakov. 10 blessings Yitzchak blessed Yaakov Avinu. Al tilali shemayim ve'al dogan haaretz. And the first of those are about the dew of the heavens, about the grain of the land. Keneged asara mamorais shebehem nivra ha'olam, corresponding to the 10 utterances with which the world was created. That's the mission and office. That Hashem created the world with basar and mamaris, with 10 utterances. Shenamar says the pasuk, "V'yiten lachoha elikim yetal shomayim." The pasuk says in the bracha that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov, and it says, "V'yiten lachoha elikim," the Lord, the good Lord, should give you mitala shomayim, from the dew of the heavens. Marzuk continues on with the rest of the psukim and shows you how there's 10 brachas. Mitala shamayim, that's one. Umishmanei ha'aretz, and the fat of the land. V'roiv dagan, that's three. A lot of grain. V'siroish, and wine, that's four. Ya'avducha amim, nations should serve you, that's five. V'shtachavu l'chol l'umim, and different nationalities shall bow to you, that's six. Heve gvir la'achacha, you should be a gvir, you should be an important person to your brother. That's seven. Vishtachavu l'cha b'nei imecha, and the sons of your mother shall bow to you. That's eight. Ayurecha arur, those who curse you shall be cursed. That's nine. Umevarechacha baruch, and those who bless you shall be blessed. So those are the 10 brachas that Yitzhak gave to Yaakov
Avinu. Two of them the same, because if your brother shall, if you shall rule over your brother, and your mother's shall, sons, his mother
will bow down to you.
He only had one.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess the words are alluding to or meaning have a different meaning. They bring out other, they manifest in different ways. I don't know exactly how what the difference between them would be. It would be interesting to look into that. Okay. Uchashiyata Yaakov me'etz p'nei Yitzchok Aviv. When Yaakov went out from in front of his father Yitzchok, Yotzla me'utor kichosan v'chakala b'kishureha. He went out like with a crown, like a chosan v'kala b'kishureha, with all the things that are tied to him. I was thinking that maybe it should say b'kishuteha, like a kala, a bride with all her adornments. So he went out like mamish, like on top of the world. And upon him fell a dew of rejuvenation from the heavens. And his bones were rejuvenated and they were replenished. Like we said in the previous parak, and we're going to discuss at great length in the future, that tal, which is dew, has the ability to bring to cause tchias amesim. It brings people back to life. That's why we say moed atal. In which bracha in Shmonesim do we say moed atal? In mechayim amesim. What does tal have to do with mechayim amesim? Right. So tal has the dew, has the ability to replenish that which needs to be replenished. If a person is dead, so the dew brings it back to life. Like to understand it, like in a very simple way, you could say like if you didn't have dew, so then all the plants would like shrivel up and die because like there's no liquid, they would just like dry up. But if they get a little bit of dew every day, which will moisturize them, so like that's enough for them to last. Like and the dew keeps them alive.
What? Rain is also climate.
Rain includes dew. You're right. But in the summer you don't have rain, but you still have dew. When the sun comes, however it manifests itself in a scientific way, when the sun is going down, so it's colder, so then there's condensation, and then that makes the water come, and that's how dew is. Whatever the dew is, but it's a special bracha from Hashem that keeps the world alive. So when Yaakov Avinu left, he got this bracha of dew. That was the whole point, to do it dafka on the night of Pesach, because the storage houses of dew are open. Itzras Tlalim are open, so Yaakov got that special bracha, and then he was like replenished and rejuvenated. You know, it's like the fountain of youth. Menasah Gamu Gibor Chayil V'Koyach, and that dew made Yaakov himself into a Gibor Chayil V'Koyach. It made him into a strong and powerful person. L'kach Nemar, the Medrash ends off like this. That's why it says in the pasuk, in the brachas of Parshas Vayechi, in the bracha that Yaakov gave to Yosef, it says Midei Avir Yaakov. And the Radal explains like this: Midei, from the hands, meaning from those hands that Yaakov Avinu, when he was pretending to be Esav, he put on his hands, you know, the fur to make himself look like Esav. So Midei, from the fact that Yaakov Avinu did that trick to be in the place of Esav, Midei, from the hands, Avir Yaakov, comes the power of Yaakov, or the strength of Yaakov. Mishom, from there, Roya Evan Yisrael. From there, Yisrael, meaning Yaakov Avinu, became a shepherd of rocks. What does that mean, a shepherd of rocks? So that's an allusion to the story that the continuation is that when Yaakov Avinu runs away, so he ends up going to this place where there's a bunch of shepherds hanging out, and there's a big fat rock on top of the well, and they're trying to move the rock so that they can all, you know, give water to feed their animals. And Yaakov Avinu just like lifts off the rock like it's nothing. Right? Where Yaakov got that strength from this bracha of dew that fell upon him and made him into a gibur kayach, gibur chayel v'kayach. Right. That's the end of the story over here of Yaakov getting the brachas. The narrative over here sort of takes a break for the next two prakim and picks up on Perek Lamed Hey, the narrative of the story of Yaakov Avinu and Yaakov with the brachas, and then what happens with Yaakov Avinu afterwards. This story of Yaakov Avinu taking the rock off is going to be in Perek Lamed Vav. The next two prakim, Lamed Gimel and Lamed Dalet, is, I guess, a somewhat tangential topic of Tchias HaMesim. That's what's going to talk about. Lamed Gimel is, I think, pretty sure that Lamed Gimel is the longest parak in Pirkei Avot. But I didn't count. But I think Lamed Gimel is a very long parak. And Lamed Dalet also talks about Tchias HaMesim. And it's going to go, it talks a little bit about Yitzhak, but then it goes into a whole thing about Tchias HaMesim, which hopefully we'll be doing for the next few weeks. And that's it.
I read a different take on the hands of the hands of Jacob. And
yeah.
I read that Yitzhak was worried that...
Oh, if you want, we have some cake.
Yaakov would try and fool him.
Yeah.
So he told Esav, listen, your brother's going to come and fool you. He's going to try and say that he's you. So he's going to talk nasty. What you got to do is come in and talk really, really nice.
Right.
And then I'll know it's you, because your brother, he's going to try and pretend to you, he's going to talk nasty.
Right.
You talk really, really nice, I'm going to talk to you. So Yaakov comes in, and he talks really, really nice like he does, and then Asa feels him.
Right.
I mean, Yitzhak feels him.
Right, so he got it. Two out of two.
Oh,
that's
good.
It. Yeah, that's
yeah.
Him.
Asa listened to me, right. He talked really, really nice, and he's got the hands there, so good, this is yet.
Right.
So I read this. I don't remember where I read it.
So it that shot comes from the Beis Halevi altar, from what's the name? Rav Yeshe Ber Soloveitchik, the Rav of Brisk. He used to be Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin, and then he went to Brisk. So yeah, that's what the Beis Halevi says that. So the problem is that he misunderstood who Yaakov Avinu is. He thought that if Yaakov Avinu was going to come trick him, Yaakov Avinu would talk nasty like Esau. He didn't realize that Yaakov Avinu would never talk nasty no matter what. Even if he's trying to be Esav, he would never be able to talk nasty. So the test doesn't work.
But this is what.
Yeah.
They said, hey, listen, Esav, you know, you talk nasty, you know, but Esav's gonna try food, you know, or right. Maybe he just said that to see what would happen. Who knows?
Right.
But you know, when he heard Yaakov talk nice, he knew, well, maybe Esav listened to me and is talking nice.
Right. All right, let's move on.